There you go. George Michael Sports Machine. Good job. Beats by Zim. It's a download here at 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, it's every month. Our resident philosopher checks in with us tonight. A very interesting topic to take us through this Wednesday, August 7th, 16th. I got to say, this is one that is very, I'm very curious about. It's about the role of sports in our society. Every month we welcome our resident philosopher, Al Genie, professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University Chicago, longtime author and, professor. You've done so many different things, and you got a new book coming out, The Importance of Being Funny, Why We Need More Jokes in Our Lives. And we'll have that conversation next month. But this month, it's about sports.
Sports, sports, sports.
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Before you get into it.
Yes.
You are just returned from, and we talked about this last month.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm out. I'll be out. I'm going to be in Africa for a while.
Right.
A week ago,
yeah.
You're in the Serengeti with 30,000 wildebeest.
We were at the migration. We were in the Masai Mara, and we were in Kenya, and then we moved into Tanzania. And we saw four crossings across the rivers with about 10,000 animals each time and extra crocodiles, which was made for interesting McDonald's lunch to see an 18-foot crocodile to suddenly come out of the water and take down a 400 or 500-pound animal.
Whoa.
In one bite. But that's the gory part. The reality was we were on the Serengeti. Serengeti means sea of grass. And we're driving with over 20,000, perhaps 30,000 wildebeest just going across there. We saw Journeys of Giraffes, that's the correct title, Journeys of Giraffes. We saw herds of elephants. We saw lion cubs that were the size of little kittens. My wife and I have been blessed to go to Africa 14 times, but this was perhaps our best trip and most exciting trip. I also got to do a little work, a little help for some people. But to come back refreshed, and I visited a lot of my relatives in Rwanda, the silverback gorillas, they all very much look like my family. They're very interesting, incredibly intelligent. The encounter was too close. Both my wife and I were touched by them, and this thing is 600 pounds. You're looking at 96% the same DNA as ourselves. And he's staring in your face, or she's staring in your face, and you don't know if they want to dance or eat you for a second, and you're very scared. And you just have to stand there. They're habituated to it. It's a marvelous experience.
Wow, that sounds great. That sounds a little bit better than me going whitewater rafting this weekend.
Well, wait a minute. Whitewater rafting is a wonderful
in Wisconsin.
It was nice.
It was nice, but I'm just saying it. There were no wildebeest.
There were no wildebeest.
That I knew of. Maybe there's a lot of woods up there, a lot of deer crossings, but no wildebeest. All right, let's get into the conversation tonight. 312-981-7200 if you want to join us. Ask the professor questions or even have comments. You can text, you can call. But let's talk about sports. Of course, we're right in the middle of it as the Bears get ready for their season. You and I, big Bears fans. The Cubs, of course, in first place and look like another World Series run could be in the cards. A lot going on right now, and sport means more than, of course, just watching it in the stands or watching it on television.
Absolutely.
Let's investigate and explore what it means to us in our daily
life. Well, let's start off with the German philosopher Hegel. Always good to start with the German philosopher. Yeah. But he said you can understand a society, you can understand and measure a society by the gods they worship. And in this society, Justin, I'm convinced we are obsessed with sports. In this society, one of our gods and one of our major icons is sports of all kinds. And, you know, because sports is everywhere in America. Think about it. They touch our lives, whether we watch them or play them. Sports language is part of our speech. You know, business people talk about full court press and driving to the hole, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And even how we dress. Think about it. Look out here on Michigan Avenue. People are they wearing clothes? No, they're wearing sports
emblems,
shorts,
yeah.
Emblems. And everything
brands,
has a logo,
right.
Brand on them, so on and so forth. And we really look at these people wearing gym shoes that cost $300 and $400 because some basketball player, I understand Michael Jordan no longer plays, so I have no idea who they might be.
Lonzo Ball, but
moving on. Yeah. And when you think about it, this is not just an old man saying, kids are out there playing too much sports. When you think about it, 40 to 50 million people plus each week watch Sunday Night Football and Monday Night Football. In fact, television watching of NFL football, which is made for television, you know, golf as can I actually quote Bill Cosby? No, I can't. He's not acceptable. But that a comic that looks very much like Bill Cosby years ago said, I just got a new color television set and I'm watching golf. Here's how it goes. Green, blue, green. What are you watching? Right? It's ridiculous. But NFL football is made for television. In fact, the NFL is a little worried because people aren't showing up for the games. It's not as interesting to be in the top bleachers. If you're on the 50-yard line, about halfway up, pretty good, right?
But, you know, I mean, you say it's America. Obviously, you talk about America and our obsession. But, I mean, some of the biggest, I think, the biggest sporting events in our culture happened overseas, whether
that's
you're
right. That's
Asia
right.
or in Europe, and you watch these soccer games
World
where
Cup,
you're like, what is going
God,
on?
I would...
So, I mean, it definitely is more than just our country's fascination with big speed, fast stuff.
Absolutely.
Right?
In our country, the Super Bowl is certainly the most watched sporting event, and then followed by the Final 16 and the basketball sense. But the big players, games that we don't play here. Soccer. I mean, we have a soccer team, I understand, somewhere on the south side on Harlem Avenue. I've never been there. And if you go there, in point of fact, it's not always American fans. They're European fans or are Patriots of that team. But the biggest played game I find is interesting. England, when you realize the imprint of England on the world, the most played games in the world are soccer, pushed by the England, rugby, cricket. You know, and these are amazing.
Millions of people come out for cricket games.
Yes.
But my point being that it seems to be the one thing beyond emotions like love or hate, as we see this week. But that connect us in this way that sport we can understand. Even if you play with a paddle instead of a bat, or you kick a round ball or an oval ball, there seems to be some connection in our society to competition and the idea of playing a sport.
Absolutely, there's real reason for that. And when you think about it, the big four in America, of course. Baseball, football, basketball, and hockey, and then the latter thing would be soccer. And one has to even question, is baseball still the American sport? Is it a great American sport? More people attend baseball games, but more people watch NFL football than anything.
Right, right.
So, excuse me.
Oh. Professor Al Gini is with us. He is the professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University of Chicago. He's also our resident philosopher here on the Download. We're talking about the importance and I would say the exploration of the values and what goes into it.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick break. We come back. Let's talk about the four categories where sports fills in. And not just for sport, but for society. To have an organized society, there need to be four categories.
Actually, three, but four. Have you come up with the fourth? We've got a coup in our hands.
All right, so the three are, and we'll talk about them when we come back.
Completion, coordination, and cooperation.
There you go. And I was going to say a strong running game is the fourth.
That's it. I forgot.
Sir Al Gini in studio tonight. Stay with us.
Favorite actor, Dennehy. Favorite drink, Old Bulls. Bears, Hawks, Sox, Bulls. Say goodbye a little longer like I ate a piece of Big Red. Grow a mustache the size of Mike Ditka's forehead. Hair comb to the side, looking like a
love
piece
that
of
song. Zim's on fire tonight, Professor. It's a Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio, Professor Al Gini. He's the Professor of Quinlan or Business Ethics at the School of Business at Loyola University, the Quinlan School of Business. And he's the resident philosopher who joins us monthly here to talk about big issues in society. Tonight we talk sports. We're talking about what it is about sport and what it means to us, not only in how we watch, but how we play.
How we play. I mean, this that little song, they're talking about Mike Ditka. Think about Mike Ditka's got this reputation. Mike Ditka made more money than God over a certain period here. He was advertising everything from Schlitz beer to plugs in your ear to hear better, et cetera. Still doing it, still with the beard, so on and so forth. Although he's been kind of down, you know, demoted in ESPN because they've got a new team coming in, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Think of his popularity when he almost wanted to, when he even suggested he wanted to run for senator. But yeah, let's think about that, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Think of the place that some of these people have in our lives.
Yeah.
These are the professionals. And I think even the professionals, whether we want to talk difference between professional and amateur sports, but Spinoza, this is uh, this guy's from Holland, not from Germany. Okay. Said, give a man an open field, a ball to catch or kick, someone or to chase around, and they are happy despite all else.
Why? Why is it? What is it about sport and what it does to us as human beings?
Because when you just talk about sports without making these distinctions, it's a professional sport, it's the NFL, it's about play, from the Latin plague, and to do something for the simple joy of doing it, for the exercise of it all, not even for the exercise of it all, for the pleasure of it all. It's a diversion from routines. It's an escape. And it also gives clarity and coherence. You know, when you go to a play, you know exactly what they're going to say if you've seen the play before, but you don't know if that wonderful first baseman of the Cubs, the Italian fellow.
Anthony Rizzo.
Yeah.
The Italian fellow.
are they still playing?
They are.
Anyway, I understand they're
pretty
good.
You don't know if he's going to hit home run.
You don't know if he's going to strike out. Whatever player it might be. I really do have jet lag. The Italian fellow on the Bear baseball
team. What's that team on the north side with the Italian fellow who plays first base?
I'm so sorry. But there's a drama to it. And sports is certainly transparent. It's happening in the moment. You don't know what's going to happen. There's excitement to it. There's no script. There's there's tension, so on and so forth. And it gives us safe role models. And unfortunately, it's now talking about safe heroes. And I have a problem with that.
Well, let's talk about that, because we make a distinction between what it means and what it feels to play.
Yeah.
But also then you have to bring in the idea of what it feels to watch, to root, to part of a club. And also to, and I say this in such a, it feels weird even saying it, but the worship of a god. I mean, that's the idea that you talked about at the beginning. These are role models? Are they heroes? When we talk about people who do well in sports, especially the ones that are publicized, What are they? Are they heroes? What are they?
And we're in a town that Michael Jordan, I just bowed my head, ladies and gentlemen, if you didn't see me on camera, Michael Jordan is a god here. I mean, it makes Ditka look like who Ditka, so on and so forth. But are they heroes? When Brett Favre retired, remember, he made it to the, he was accepted to the Hall of Fame. 85,000 people paid $5 a head to show up in the stadium in Green Bay just to applaud him.
Just to see him
walk out.
It wasn't
even a game. To see him simply walk out.
Right, right.
And go to Green Bay. Remember, Green Bay is the only football team in the NFL. It's owned by the community, and you can't buy the stock because it's limited, et cetera, et cetera. And there's something really important that they identify with it and so on and so forth. And I think that they can give us, I mean, the great Joe DiMaggio wouldn't smoke in public because, the kids will see me. In fact, that was the reason for Barkley's famous ad, "I'm not a role model." He understood he was a role model, never talked about Marilyn, the wife, and the divorce and so on and so forth. He wanted to keep that all separate. So we looked at them, but I really want to make a distinction. I think Gale Sayers was perhaps the flashiest, most beautiful running back I've ever seen. I got to practice against him. That's how old I am. I got to practice against him. I got to spend some time with him. An incredible athlete who could shift his hips and shift his ankles and move his knees and boom, 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 and be gone without knowing it. But he wasn't a hero. He was a great athlete enjoying the moment as a player, using his skills. O.J. Simpson, which is not a particularly good person, makes talking about Bill Crosby.
But you're right. I mean,
the greatest running back, perhaps, in the NFL.
Yes.
He's not a hero. He's getting paid money to go left.
Well, where did we come up with this idea? Because I could go back and I think about the Olympics and when someone would win an Olympic sport, and even going all the way back to, I don't know if they did this back in the ancient Greek times, but this idea of putting someone on a pedestal and giving them a gold medal and singing their anthem. There has always been this way that humans have added something to the people who do well. We want to look up to them.
We want to be moved by them. We really do want to use them as role models. And in some sense, there's nothing wrong with that when it's put in perspective, okay? But as my friend Ron Green points out, he says, we're obsessed with sports in this society. We forget the larger issues. It's like we're to talk about next time on my new book, thank you for mentioning it, about humor. Humor is really important, but nobody wants a buffoon. Nobody wants a guy who walks the room and starts telling, shaggy dog stories for 2 hours.
And I want to get to this, and I want to do it in the second half, because I still want to set up the cooperation and completion, things of that nature. But, I mean, there's always going to be a side effect, a byproduct to hero worship, where you have people who get up on a pedestal who do fall down,
who don't
do what they're supposed to do, and they don't follow the script.
Right.
But you also see in this day and age, and again, we'll talk more about this coming up, a different kind of idol, and a different kind of hero and a different kind of maybe even anti-hero with Colin Kaepernick, even LeBron James stepping up in the last day saying, hey, I'm aware of what's happening in Charlottesville and I have a platform. I mean, counting it.
Right. And I want to suggest that that's totally appropriate. You may not like it, totally appropriate. But what bothers me is we venerate them simply because they made the team. That's not enough. I mean, I think LeBron James, I think even Michael Jordan, it's like Barbra Streisand saying, vote for candidate X. I love Barbra Streisand.
I'm
not necessarily going to vote for candidate X because Barbra Streisand likes it. But they do have a platform because they're popular, because we venerate excellence. Now, that's one of the keys to sports. One of the reasons we like sports, we venerate excellence. Michael Jordan was once asked, can he fly? And he said, for a little bit. And you know, and when you see a wonderful shot of him laying up or going to dunk there, that was beauty. If you put a tutu on him, that was the most beautiful ballet dancer you're ever going to see in your life.
So we do. You're right. Yeah. There's excellence, a big part in this.
And we're drawn to that. But as my friend Ron Green started to say, he said, we're obsessed by that to the point that we forget other issues. And there's a wonderful story. I always tease him about sports because, you know, he says, I can't catch it. I don't want to catch it. I'll never learn how to catch that kind of thing. And so I sent him an email one morning years ago. I said, the Bears, the NFL game today, the Bears are playing the Giants. Who do you think I should put my money on? Al, right?
Right.
3 minutes later, he sends back, I always am in favor of hominoids over carnivores. Go with the Bears.
There you go, right?
They know one thing about the sport.
Well, let's talk. We got a couple minutes right before the news here, but let's set up the three areas of why sport, why it is important to not just humans, but to an organized society. I mean, these really can be used for anything, but these are why sport works.
And this goes all the way back to Plato's Republic. Plato and the Republic, Plato talks about how do we build a just state? How do we build a just society? How do we build just leaders? Oh, good concept. We should talk about that sometime. How do we get people who are really committed? Well, part of that is training, and they have to be trained. So first of all, he says men and women should be trained alike, should exercise alike until a certain point, a little past puberty, where you have to separate them. But children should play together. By the way, I don't know about your son, but my kids played on soccer teams with boys and girls. I thought that was great. I thought there was a huge advance, and I see no reason why boys and girls can't be playing Little League baseball together up to a certain point when strength comes in, et cetera, et cetera. But this notion of playing together, being together, exercising together, because we have to learn about our body, we forget that our bodies are really important. We have to take care of our bodies. And so the real purpose of sports is completion, coordination, and cooperation. Completion, the testing of one's body, to find out who it, you know, this, you're way too young for this. I remember in kindergarten, they made us skip. That was our exercise. We skipped. Simple as that, you know, skip. Mm-hmm. But there were certain kids who couldn't skip, and they brought in the coach to help them skip. I thought, well, what's wrong with that? Well, they had never used their bodies at all. They had sat and there was no TVs, listened to the radio, whatever they're doing.
Yeah, they
learned nothing. Right. They had no physical skills. My friend Ronnie, you know, he's genius, 3 PhDs, Harvard, et cetera, et cetera. But because of that, he never examined that other side of his sense. Hmm. And so Plato wants to talk about, we really want to know about one's bodies. We want to expand our range of physical abilities. We want to expand our endurance. We simply want to be comfortable in our bodies. We also want to take care of our bodies.
It definitely get in touch with your body.
Absolutely. I love that Obama once said in an interview in Atlantic Magazine, it was James Fallow's article, he said, the most important part of my day is the hour I spend with my trainer in the morning. He said, the basketball games are for fun. That's not exercise. You know, I play 25 minutes, I take 4 shots.
Right.
But working with the trainer, because without that, I would go mad.
Wow. Professor Al Jeaney's in studio tonight. He's a professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University Chicago. He also is the author of The Importance of Being Funny, Why We Need More Jokes in Our Lives. And he, of course, is with us once a month here on the download to talk about different big issues in society. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We'll take a break quick, and we will get back to Rob Martier and the news. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest in studio tonight, Professor Al Jeaney, the professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University of Chicago, and also our resident philosopher here on The Download, joins us every month to talk about the big picture, big ticket items, 312-981-7200. Because it's August and we're getting ready for football season to start, we're talking about sports and its importance to society in more ways than one. I mean, you know, we talk about what it means to us, what it means to watch sports, but also we're going to get into some of the other storylines and the ways that human beings have changed sport over time.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about, we kind of got through completion.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the other two areas.
The other two is the second that Plato talks about, we need athletics, we need sports for coordination. That is, to learn how to synchronize our body and mind, to learn how to work with others, to learn how to work with ourselves. And sports is really a mind-body experience. Certainly if you're a golfer, you know that. Certainly if you know anything about yoga, that yoga is really a mind-body experience. And, you know, certainly the wonderful thing about television right now in baseball, I actually do watch it on occasion, is that wonderful camera work now. You see the ball come and the strike zone. Now, my father played for the Cubs before World War II and the farm team in Iowa. He was a great athlete and hated me because I wasn't. But I could hit smoke in high school. But then when they started throwing curves, that was the end of everything, right? The hardest thing in the world is to hit a round ball with this strange object of a bat, right? And even in cricket as well, the same kind of thing. It's a different kind of throw, and they bounce. It's ridiculous.
Yes.
But it teaches, you know, it's a mind-body. If your head's not in it, and you talk to batters, they read the arm of the pitcher. They see the ball. The ball's going to break left, right? And they're doing algorithms.
A lot of it is about coordination. It is about being in sync with your whole body, right?
And it's called court sense. Michael Jordan took one bounce of the basketball. He took the ball in bounds, one bounce, and like a chess player, he knew every variation on that field.
So we've got completion and coordination.
Right.
What's the third
one? And then cooperation. That is a community effort, collective behavior, recognizing teamwork. There is no I in team. Yeah, but there are lots of I's on the team. And unless those I's work together, you don't win.
Teamwork plays a big part in sports.
Huge.
We hear it all the time. I mean,
it's seeking together. You know, think about it. Competition and completion are, it's from the Latin word competere, to seek together. And that's what sports is about. It is a sport team. And the NFL, I must admit, if there's one team that's absolutely a team sport, it's NFL football. I mean, poor Jay Cutler, been just, you know, made into a villain here in Chicago. But you can't be a good quarterback if you can't stand up long enough to throw the ball, right?
But teamwork is a big part of
sport.
Huge,
a huge issue in that. And so in a very real sense, it is about this learning to seek together. And it's the basis for General Douglas MacArthur, when he was commandant at West Point, to say that every student here must play a sport, because he said it is on the playing fields of Eton that the British officer class learned how to defeat Napoleon. Mm-hmm. And there's something to that. I think it pertains even today. You have to be on some team one way or another
to understand how teams work.
Yeah,
chemistry, right. And that helps you in working in an office or working in a construction field, the idea of a team.
Right. And certainly in the military, from the naval model, which I really love as a model, although it's already sad, it's ship, shipmates, and self. If you don't save the ship, there's no shipmates or self,
right?
So what is the proportion? And if you don't do this all together, you're in real trouble. So I think the benefits of sports, why you send your kids to play sports, why I send my kids to play sports, is coordination and development and play. And so I think the real issue of sports in our society today is the distinction between amateur sports, and amateur means a lover of, and professional sports.
Well, okay, so we're going to get into that distinction in just a second, but I'm fascinated because you had completion, coordination, cooperation, but I didn't hit the other C. Is competition.
Yeah.
And I think that might be a nice bridge for us to get into where sports goes awry.
Yeah.
Competition, you would think, is always talked about when you talk about even an amateur coach or anyone talks about competition's important. Is competition an important part of sport and an important part of being a human being?
I think competition in the right sense, that's a great question, and I think that should be added, but, you know, I can't get back to Plato. I haven't seen him in a long time. But I do think that should be added, because I think competition does bring out something in us. You know, you go to the dog track, which I don't do anymore, but that rabbit leading the dogs. I mean, you need that stimuli to do it. I think competition can bring out the best of us. Excessive competition can be a negative.
Well, I think in all of the – it's fascinating to me, because – if you put the word excessive in front of any of the things we talked about, just the categories you just had,
right.
it is a recipe for disaster, right, in the way that we see more oftentimes we see this happen, the subversion of sport around excessive competition,
right,
excessive completion or cooperation, where it just it takes the idea that this is part of our human experience to either play or to worship play,
right,
and somewhere in there, someone figures out how to make money off.
Right, but you're absolutely right. But I do think that there this notion of competition is really, really important. I used to play handball with Johnny Lattner in the morning. Sadly, passed away about 18 months ago. Heisman Trophy winner from Notre Dame in 1953, and I would braggadocio every once in a while say, you know, I beat a Heisman Trophy winner before breakfast this morning because he had broken his leg or something. I managed to win. But Johnny thought everything was a competition. Johnny thrived on it. Johnny got in the court, and he wanted to play. And we kept saying, Johnny, handball is not a contact sport. Please do not knock me down when you go for the ball. He didn't mean to hurt you. He wanted the ball. He wanted to play. He loved that. Now, when you harness that correctly, I see that in my students. The best students are those who work in teams who like that competition, who thrive on that competition. But competition, like drugs, like aphrodisias, like any kind of thing you get lost in, is a dangerous brew, and you have to be very careful with it.
I mentioned money.
Yep.
That's a big part. I want to talk about how that changes the way this conversation is playing out.
Yeah.
Meaning when we talk about sport and how important it is to human beings, but also to societies, also to self.
Yeah.
Your shipmate self, right?
Right.
Where does it start to go awry? Is it money? Is the idea that people have professionalized this and is making money? So some of the things that the other things that we respect on the human level
trash? I think even before we talk about money, you have to make a distinction between amateur sports and professional sports. But I want to say this. Amateur sports where you're not really getting money is no longer true anymore. I mean, you're in a high school team. You're getting in a good high school team. They're getting good shoes, and they're getting
the loser of my 16 in softball team. They're paying for the beer afterwards, right?
That kind of thing. Certainly, the better athletes are groomed, and so on and so forth. But let's put money in perspective. In 1930, Babe Ruth, arguably the best baseball player who's ever played the game before, and I say that arguably, I think that it's hard to compare generations, was making $80,000 in 1930. And when it was asked by a reporter, he says, President Hoover doesn't make $80,000 a year. Ruth's comment was, I know, but I had a better year than Hoover. $80,000 a year.
Yeah, it's amazing. That's a lot of money.
In 1953, when Johnny Lattner signed with the Steelers, his contract and bonus was $11,000.
Okay. Beyond, and I guess that's one aspect of money. But I also think the idea that you can make billions of dollars off of contracts, off of a sport, we're seeing it right now play out in the NFL where the things that make us human and the things that the fans want to like you said, like either worship gods or heroes or robots, they're sort of the strings are being pulled by people who have bottom line interest.
Right. And I do think that this is where this good thing, this good notion of play, this good notion of completion, this good notion of coordination, this good notion of competition is lost in the money. And this gentleman from UCLA, whose father was the basketball player, whose father was involved in trying to advance him, he lost millions and millions of dollars because the father spoke up too much, apparently, and he didn't get the contract that he wanted.
Well, let's talk about Colin Kaepernick, right?
Right. And Colin Kaepernick right now is not signed. Jay Cutler just got signed. Colin Kaepernick, who's got more equal or greater ability and certainly younger than Cutler, is not being signed because he's seen as an outlier. He's seen as dangerous. He's not playing the game. This game is about playing the game, not presenting your points of view.
Well, when you have issues like concussions and issues like domestic violence, issues around what a league knows and what the players know when it comes to their injuries. Then you have issues of blacklisting players who really, at the end of the day, did social protests. They didn't do any of the things I just mentioned, right?
Right.
I mean, you start to develop this idea that sport, as we're talking about it, it's important and we all should be a part of it, isn't as alluring as it once was. You get to a certain point where you're like, I don't know if I want to watch this on the television.
I never thought I totally understand what you're saying right now. Let me try to tell a story and answer because I can't answer that directly. I've been an NFL fan for a long, long time. because I thought the level of proficiency was so great, so wonderful, so special that it was worth watching. The level of excellence. But because the sport has been tainted by money, and think about it, we just talked about this off mic. Mm-hmm. We're watching a football game on TV for 3.5 hours, 3 hours and 45 minutes. Why? Because of commercials, you know, and because they have to make money and so on and so forth. They're paying these people all this money. But I now rather enjoy, here's the best health secret in Chicago. Northwestern is just 6 miles north of where we're sitting right now.
But you can't say that.
And, wait a minute.
I love Northwestern, but that opens a can of worms about college.
No, wait. $45, you see a pretty good
sure.
day.
Sure. That's my I love point. The Wildcats. But my point being that, you know, I could have guests on who have written great books about how sport has been destroyed by right. college athletics. The idea that many people aren't getting money, but somebody's making money off these kids, right?
We're talking about proficiency in the play.
Let me ask you this question because we've got about 5 minutes left. And this is one that I want to shout out to the people who aren't in the sports. And all the things that we're talking about. Because it seems at a certain point at the amateur level that sport goes from having fun, the completion, coordination, the things that are important to you, you know, self and self-made, and even teamwork, to a high school experience where a sport culture prevails. And we see this all the time where there might be more cliques and it might be more frat house or locker room culture where it almost creates a culture around it that if you don't belong to the sets and values of that culture, you're ostracized. Where does that come from? Is that something that goes all the way back in human behavior, saying sport is important to these people, the others, you got to get out of here? Like there seems to be an unequal feel when it comes to sports and click.
It's been skewed. And according to Rick Callender in his wonderful book, which is now ancient, The 100 Yard Lie, he's talking about that's about the teachers and the coaches, that they've driven this notion of blind obedience to a rule that you're only a man, you're only a real person unless you could endure pain and do this. And there's this wonderful quote. He says, hey, anybody can be a nuclear physicist. Anybody, all you have to do is read a book, but it takes a real man to play football. That's the dangerous notion that's permeated in our high schools, permeated in our grammar school. I've seen, Alabama, I think 4 years ago, signed an eighth grader. A letter of intent. There's something wrong with that. And there's something wrong with the University of Alabama. I mean, when I was talking about Northwestern, it was about proficiency of play. Forget all the other problems. There's all kinds of problems involved there. University of Alabama is a machine. But having said that, there's an interesting factor. Although college football, you know, doesn't drag in that many people, it's the television. The major college programs are funding those schools. We forget that University of Alabama is a world-class intellectual institution with a corrupt football program, probably, right?
Right.
But it's all connected to that you're only a man if you make the team, if you start, and so on and so forth.
And is there a way, and I think about this having a 10-year-old, and I think about my life in sports, where I always loved sports and I was good at it to a certain point, and then I hit a roadblock that was that culture. A culture that would ostracize you, or like you said, like if you didn't do it a certain way, this way, the coach's way, or whatever, you weren't a man.
You weren't a man.
And you found yourself quickly having to choose whether or not that was right for you, and in most cases it's not. Is there a way to take the issues, or not the issues, but the tent poles, the chapters that you mentioned, cooperation, completion, coordination, and even all the other things about teamwork and things we just talked about this hour, and apply it to your life without sport, without this idea of playing with a round ball? And in 2017, could it be video games? Could it be other parts of culture that could use the same things but isn't necessarily a sport you and I grew up with?
Yes, but again, you want to talk about the body. I mean, you're going to get people to exercise. I think what we're forgetting about is it's supposed to be play and health. And it's supposed to be a greater sense of self. And I think Aristotle is right. Those of us who've meditated on the raising of society have to start with youth. And youth need to play. And that's how we learn things. I do understand what you're saying right now, but I don't know an answer to that. Is there a substitute for the physicality of it? Yes, it's called exercise and push-ups and so on and so forth.
But you see more and more people doing competitive, whether it's in gyms or other places.
Everything's competitive now.
Yeah.
Who's that beautiful beautiful little girl that was murdered. You know, they're all dressed up and so on and so forth. People have all these strange rituals by which that are rites of passage. But I think sports can be a healthy rite of passage in a democracy that advocates all children should play to the level of their own ability. Now, one of the good things and the bad things about Little League Baseball right now is if you win the first place, you get the trophy. If you come in third, you get the same trophy, you know, and that, et cetera, et cetera. But the real purpose behind all that is it's the play that's more important than the winning of it.
I know. And I only push back, Professor, in the way that I watch on ESPN the Little League championships right now. And I think about what happened in Chicago a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And I feel like all of that, when I'm seeing on the screen or the rules or the politics and everything else, gets in the way of what you're talking about when you
Justin,
say play. So let's find a different way to play.
But, Justin, everything good in life has an excess. I mean, alcohol is a bonum delectabile. Alcohol is a good thing, but not a fifth every night.
Right.
I mean, sports is a good thing, but not when it becomes the only thing and exclusion to other things. So I think that we're talking about athletics here, and my critique of professional and amateur athletics is we care too much about that, and we forget that there are larger issues. To sit in front of a football game while the world is falling apart, I wonder about that, but to sit in front of a football game because it's a wonderful diversion, you have nothing else to do, or you want to do that versus something else, makes sense.
Yeah.
So is it entertainment or is it lifestyle? And in fact, and I think unfortunately in our society, our cliques are around, you know, what team are you on?
Yeah, right. As we wrap up, I mean, as we kind of put this together, I mean, what should be the takeaway from this hour?
I think that an amateur really does mean the word amateur really does mean lover, and I think sports can be loved, but they shouldn't be worshipped.
Professor Al Genie, it's always a pleasure, man. It's so fun to talk with you, talk about these big issues, especially here on the show once a month. Professor Al Genie, professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business, Loyola University of Chicago. He's our resident philosopher. He's got a brand new book, too, which next month we will talk about, The Importance of Being Funny, Why We Need More Jokes in Our Lives.
And you know why that book is important? Because if it doesn't sell, my grandchildren do not go to college. So just remember that, ladies and gentlemen, when next we meet.
So that'll be next month's conversation. Let's get Al's kids to college. Professor, great to see you. Thanks for being here.
See you soon.